Hello! Welcome to a very special bonus episode of Tales from the Backlog about Balatro. This was unplanned, as I think a lot of people found Balatro to be an unplanned time suck in their life recently, and I mean that in the most endearing way possible. So before we get to the special episode with two wonderful guests today, I just want to say thank you to the patrons who support the show and keep this whole thing going. So they are Chris Nelson, the Top 3 Podcast Crew, Zulgeek, Chris Copleen, Eric Guess, Rick Firestone, Nick Ficori, Jill, Jeff, formerly Jerf, Kieran, Soccer, ZNA, Cupcake, Kyle, Christian S., Matt, aka Stormageddon, JD, Doug Leaf, Jason Emery, Brian Skirsha, Randall, Jake Martin, Jenny E., and many more. Thank you so much for your support. It means the world to me. And if you're listening and you'd like to support the show that way, you can do that at patreon.com/realDaveJackson, where as little as $2 per month will get you some bonus treats related to the show. So, with that being said, let's get into Balatro. Hello, everybody. My name is Dave Jackson, and you're listening to a special bonus episode of Tales from the Backlog. This is a video games review podcast where each week I'm joined by a guest to bring a game out of the backlog, play it, and discuss. Although this game today, I feel like, number one, is kind of new, but also I feel like is not really in people's backlogs. It's kind of a everyone has seemed to buy it lately and jump straight into the deep end. But before we get into the game today, I would like to introduce a real jumbo buffoon pack of guests in this episode today. I'm joined by one of the hosts of Fun and Games Reignite Screen Snark Podcasts. Welcome back, Matt, aka Stormageddon.
Hey, I'm happy to be back.
And we're also joined by host of Superpod Saga, Aaron Clausen. Aaron, welcome back.
Hello. I swear to God, I don't plan on being late every single time I record with you. Stuff just happens, like trees and kids and stuff. Please don't hate me.
Trees and kids and combinations of both of those things. Exactly. It's all good, man. Happy to have you here today. Today, the three of us are going to talk about Balatro, which is a roguelike deck builder developed by one-person developer Local Thunk and published by PlayStack for modern platforms here in 2024. And before we get started, I would like to say thank you to Local Thunk and PlayStack for providing a review code for me.
Yeah, and thank you for providing me with a review code as well. It's your fault.
Yeah, I think on the email where they sent out the codes, I think they actually were like, very sorry for ruining your productivity, but here's a review code for Balatro.
Yeah, shout out to Wout, aka the Hashtagonist, who's a dear friend and who does PR for Balatro. He knows what he's getting us into as he's been playing it as well.
Yep. So if this is your first time listening to the show, first of all, thank you for stopping by. Here is how spoilers work on this podcast. Now, this is a roguelike deck builder, and it's a very, it's all mechanics, basically. So there's no story to spoil here. But what we are going to do is we're going to do the normal subdivision of the parts of the episode. We're going to have the more general, broad, no sicko shop talk section at the beginning. And then we will do the quote spoiler wall per usual. And then afterwards, we'll get into that shop talk where we'll give recommendations for new players who are starting Balatro, tips for how to make the best of your runs, and then talk about what helped our best runs in that later section of the episode. So we will keep the earlier section of this episode to a more general overview of what this game is and why it works. So speaking of what it is, we have elevator pitches for what Balatro is. I say it's a roguelike deck builder where you use poker hands to score points.
And I say it's a bonkers roguelike poker with rude jokers and game-breaking bonuses.
I describe it as Jester makes you win chips by scoring big numbers.
Mm-hmm. And I played this on PC, mostly on Steam Deck. I played The first play session, I played this on PC. I streamed that session. I should put that up on the YouTube channel if anyone wants to watch somebody fall into the pit in real time. And then afterwards, it was all Steam Deck. This game runs great on Steam Deck. All told, I've got about 11 or 12 hours played.
For me, I played it on Switch. Dave and I, both notorious handheld sickos.
Yep.
And I've put in about 6 hours or so. It's a really convenient commuter game. I've been playing it like to and from work on the train. It's kind of perfect for that on Switch.
Yeah.
And once again, I had to pay full price for this fucking thing twice. And so Switch, I got 10 hours. Xbox, I have 15 hours. But I've got more cleared runs on the Switch in those 10 hours, I guess. So that's cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is a game that you will see hours melt away. And like, I think so. I've got, like I said, 11 or 12 hours played. That's like 4 or 5 play sessions. Like, it's not a game where I pick it up and play for 15 minutes and then put it down. It is a compulsive one more run type of game. And I personally like deck builders. Some of my favorites, Monster Train and Slay the Spire, of course. Games I put tons of time into, especially Slay the Spire. That was a real time sink for me personally. So I kind of got into this because I didn't play it during Next Fest. I heard about it during Next Fest, and then when the game released, and it was just everywhere, every single, you know, what are you playing lately segment on my favorite podcast was all like Balatro Sicko time, list off, and all of our other friends were just talking about Balatro. So I reached out, was able to get that code and jump in. Now, Aaron, I know that you're a roguelike deck builder freak. So what was it that drew you to Balatro? How did you hear about it?
Two words, deck building roguelike. No, in all seriousness, no, it just looked really different because like all other deck builders that I've played, like two that you mentioned, Slay the Spire, Monster Train, a few more little hidden gems in there, Wild Frost, and heck, even Dicey Dungeons, I guess. It's just different than those because most other deck building roguelikes are like you versus monsters or like you in some kind of combat type situation. And this one just looked chill as hell. It's just like, hey, rack up a gigantic skyscraper multiplier and then win big numbers and I'm all in.
Yeah, this is a if you like numbers going up, this is the game for you. Matt, what was it that drew you to Balatro?
So I mean, I have a history with roguelike deck builders, though it's less hours. Like, I only first played Slay the Spire I think 2 years ago, and in that 2 years I then got it on Steam and on Switch because it was before the Steam Deck came out, and so I've become a pretty big sicko for that. But I think more for me it's just deck builders and card games in general. I mean, I, like a lot of our friends, are addicted to Queen's Blood right now in Rebirth, but I also love Joustice in King of Cards, which was one of the expansion campaigns for Shovel Knight. And like, I scoffed at that. I was like, oh, card game, like Yacht Club, I love your games, but you're going to make me play a card game. And after like 3 rounds, I was like, oh no, I'm in trouble. But for whatever reason, Balatro, like, I had heard murmurs of it during Steam's Next Fest and then kind of didn't pay attention. What did it was, for your listeners, in case they don't know, besides the podcast that I do, I'm also the editor for the Game Informer Show, which is a weekly podcast about the games industry, often hosted by Alex Van Aken, Marcus Stewart, and Kyle Hilliard, though they have tons of guests on. And like the week before, no, actually, it might have been during Steam Next Fest or like right after, but like during that like few week period before the game released, they were all talking about it. Like, they were in like full sicko deck builder mode while I was editing, and I was like, oh no, am I gonna have to play this game? And then again, shout out to my friend Wout. I saw him tweeting about, you know, folks still want codes if they want to cover the game, to reach out. And so I did. And once I got the code, I went, all right, well, let's see what this game is about. I don't know. And the next thing I know, 3 hours went by. Like I said, that I've been playing for like 6 or 7 hours. Half of that time was one sitting, just me. Yeah. Like, I was like, oh no. In fact, at one point, if you look on the internet, if you go to my Twitter, you can see a photo of me playing Balatro while watching Dave play Balatro on stream. So like, like, that's how you knew, like, I was literally the sicko image, the sicko gif, like, yeah. full on, and I didn't expect to love it as much as I did, but it's just kind of one of those games that just gets its hooks in you, especially if you like that kind of style.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, like I said, of roguelike deck builders, but I'm actually not a big fan of poker. I did not grow up playing poker. I've played it maybe twice in my life. And one of those times is in Red Dead Redemption 2. So like I know what a flush is, but like if people are like, hey, do you want to come over and play poker? I'll probably just like say no. I don't really like poker. So that was a source of hesitation for me. Shout out to Euchre, by the way. I'm a Euchre boy out here in the Midwest. So the fact that everyone described this as a poker roguelike originally was like kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, I hope you kids have fun with that. But then I heard some people kind of saying like, it's like it has poker theming, but you're not playing poker. Like, and yeah. You don't have to know poker. The game will teach you everything you need to know right away. So that kind of broke down that wall for me too. And I wanted to make sure we mentioned that fairly early in the episode that like, you may hear the word poker thrown around here, but you're not playing poker. Like, you're not playing against people. You're not bluffing or any of that shit. Like, it's just using the hands that might win you a poker hand to score points. It's all just the terminology, basically.
Yeah. It's funny. I might be the only person on the call who actually played poker regularly for any period of time. Like, I'm not really a gambler. Every time I've ever gone gambling, I have like a set amount of money. And once I lose it, which is often very quickly, if I go to a casino or on a cruise or something, once I've lost that money, I went, well, that's it. I guess I'm not gambling anymore. Like, it's not my thing. But when I do, I'll often do poker because like, I know it. I used to play poker with my grandfather growing up. Like, we would just play hands together. And then when I was in my early 30s, a friend of mine who used to own a bar in Brooklyn, like we became good friends and he would do poker nights with friends. And so like we'd have small antes and like buy-ins were really low, but we would, you know, there'd be a nice little friendly pot of money and then we'd just play poker. And I was notoriously bad at it too. Like I don't have a good poker face. I would often like win with the wildest hands on bluffs that I had no business bluffing. It drove my friends crazy. My friend Ben, who like lived in Vegas, was a bouncer, played a lot, did a lot of gambling. I always threw him for a loop because he'd be like, how the hell did you win with that hand? That's BS. But like, I never went out of my way to play poker. It was always friendly games and stuff. So I wasn't really worried about the terminology. But that said, I mean, this game really does set you up for success. Like, you don't have to memorize the hand types to know or be able to play this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I only know the hands now because of Balatro. And by the way, this game is coming to mobile phones real soon. Yeah. So I'm ready to triple dip.
If it goes to Apple Arcade, I won't have to at least purchase that version because I still am one of the weirdos who pays for Apple Arcade.
Yeah, it's one of the more obvious mobile ports in the history of mobile ports. This and like also Slay the Spire and Vampire Survivors and stuff like
Dicey
that.
Dungeons.
And Dicey Dungeons. Yeah.
Buttery smooth.
Mm-hmm. So if you are listening to this and you don't have a PC or a Switch or PlayStation or Xbox, well, you have a phone, don't you? As the famous press conference went. So you can play this on your phone and hopefully there's some kind of like cross progression between platforms. That would be nice. But yeah. So before we kind of talk about how the game is, we don't want to bury the lead too much. I think this game's really good. And we saw earlier today, I think they just announced today as we're recording that it has sold 1 million copies in what, like 2-3 weeks since it released. Yeah. So very successful game. And it deserves that success. It's a really, really good game. I think it has good like theming and stuff around it, but it is a mechanics and numbers and math game at its core. I feel like you could almost replace the cards with other stuff. You would still have this math behind it all and it would still work. I'm not sure that this game is going to have like the long legs for me personally that other things like Slay the Spire did, but I don't want to take away from how well made this is as an experience. And we'll talk about what the secret sauce is a little bit after this this upcoming music break here. But I do think this game is really, really good. And sometimes, you know, a game will sweep the industry and you'll be like, I don't really get it. What does everyone see in this? And this is not one of those cases. I 100% understand it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I was hesitant at first because also I'm not great at roguelikes. Like, notoriously, I really didn't play any of them until Hades. Like, 90% of the games industry who didn't play roguelikes started playing them after Hades. Mm-hmm. But like, that when I heard this was also one, I went, well, I don't know. But like, losing is so painless in this, and we'll get more into that. But like, it mm-hmm. flows so well that, yeah, I agree. I think it's a great game. I think it's worthy. A lot of folks are saying it's their game of the year, which I can totally see that, especially if you like these kinds of games. But it's definitely left an impression and mostly made people stop talking about Pal World. So there's that too.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God.
Props for that. Yeah.
Yeah, it is really, really good. And I like that it's basic. Up until, I guess, this game and maybe a few other games, deck building roguelikes were more of like a hardcore experience, at least from like my point of view, because as like as the resident deck builder sicko, I guess, talking to like a few other people, they say that card games just aren't their thing, or like roguelikes aren't their thing. But I'm glad this one drew in a whole new crowd of just people who want to play a chill-ass game and just throw out like a two pair and score like 2 million chips or whatever. It's awesome.
Yeah. So let's listen to a bit of music from Balatro, that nice, soothing, calm music. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, we'll talk about what that gameplay is actually like. So, like I said earlier, Balatro is often described in shorthand as a poker roguelike. And I guess if you want to describe the game in two words, that'll do. But again, you're not actually playing poker. You have a standard deck of cards, regular playing cards. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to make poker hands to score points. And the kind of hierarchy of poker hands determines how many points they're worth all by themselves. So a straight flush is going to be the best hand, a single card is going to be the worst hand, and then everything in between. Each kind of round is set up. They use poker terminology in ways that like they don't mean in real life. So each round, and there's 8 rounds in a run, if you want to beat one, you have to go through 8 rounds. Each round is called an ante, and in each ante there are 3 battles, we'll say, that you have to get through. They call them blinds. Each one of those has an increasing set, like target points that you have to reach. And the way that you reach those points is you try to form poker hands with the cards that you draw. And each hand has a specific value, we'll say, of number of points and a multiplier modifier. And then you get more points called chips in the game based on the value of the cards. So an ace is worth 11, a king is worth 10, 9 is worth 9, yada, yada, yada. And then in between those rounds, there's a shop where you can buy all manner of things that can enhance your deck, modify your multiplier, dictate your strategy, and all kinds of things like that. So the first thing I think that makes this game really good is they start out with things that you know, playing cards. Everybody knows the standard set of playing cards. You know that an ace is better than a king, is better than a queen, etc. Then they give you a very simple decision, but lots of them, like all in a row. So you get your cards, you choose what hand to play. Yada, you get through the round. You reach the target score, you go to the shop. Then you get to choose what to buy. And all of the decisions are really well explained. They're all very simple on their own. But since it's one of these roguelike deck builders, you need to try to choose things that will end up synergizing together, because you will not be able to reach those target scores just by playing, you know, a full house every hand. Eventually, that's not going to be enough all by itself. You're going to need these extra things. So I will kick it to the both of you if you want to talk about what some of those extra things are, like the jokers and the planets and stuff.
Sure. I'll talk about the jokers because I think they're kind of the core, and then the other bonuses kind of build on it. So in this game, you don't have just a couple of jokers like a typical playing card deck. There's 150 different jokers that you can get in this game. And how they work is they modify the chips you get, which are the points, the mults, which are the multipliers, and other things in between. And you can buy them from the store between each of the blinds. You earn a little bit of money after every round, and then you can put that towards the jokers. And they all do a variety of different things, have different fun names. Some of them are pretty basic, like just giving you extra chips for a type of suit or extra chips for a type of card. And it builds out from there, like some turn change your cards, like make them do different things, or like there's one that makes your cards gold, and when your cards are gold, if they're still in your hand at the end of the turn, you get more money, things like that. And very quickly, the game becomes not about a standard 52 card deck. It's how many of these jokers can you have to make the run different, to earn you more chips, to help you beat these blinds that escalate. And you can have five jokers standardly. You can have five jokers in your like top bar screen that modify, and then you can sell them if you don't want them and buy more and like swap them out to create a strategy.
Yeah. So like one of the key things that you'll realize very, very soon in playing Balatro is that your jokers will dictate the hands that you play, not necessarily what the best poker hand will be. So like, let's say you have a joker that gives you +4 to your multiplier every time you play a spade, then playing a pair of spades will probably get you more points than playing a full house that doesn't involve spades. But if you're playing poker, that's not going to be the case. So What I really like about this is you start with those very core poker rules. Like you need to know what a full house is. But after that, you're really following the deck that you make. And the deck can involve adding regular playing cards to your standard deck. But what it really means is you're trying to collect a set of jokers that will just bust the math wide open in your favor.
Yeah.
Bust the math. Yeah, really, it's all about getting like the right set of jokers and also having the right amount. Or I guess you can also tweak your deck. I really like, you can tweak your deck with the spectral cards and the tarot cards. And
yeah.
Then you have, of course, the planet cards, where you can level the hell out of your different hands. Like if you're going all flushes, you can crank them all the way up to like level, I don't even know what the max, I think the max level is 20, level 20 with the planet cards.
You can get them pretty high, yeah. So like a specific hand will have a specific chip value and multiplier value, and you can upgrade how good that hand is, which will add chips and a higher multiplier every time you play it. So you can try to synergize this, like you can get a joker that will give you a huge bonus if you play a flush. And then you can also level up the base value of playing a flush by getting these planet cards. And if you're able to get those things to synergize really well, you can really start kicking ass like pretty early on. And then if you go on YouTube and search for like people's winning Balatro runs, like I think to beat the very first battle, you have to get 300 points, 300 chips. And then if you can look and find people getting like billion point hands near the end of these runs in Balatro, like it can get completely out of control based on all the ways that you can edit and enhance your deck.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. And like Aaron also mentioned the spectral and tarot cards, those enhance the cards themselves. And you say, how do you enhance playing cards? Well, you can increase their value. You can change their suit. You can turn some cards to stone, which just gives you 50 chips when you play them. And you can play them by themselves, part of a hand, either or. They do a bunch of different things. And all of these modifiers both affect the multipliers, like Dave was talking about, or the chips, either the value of the chips, but they affect the cards directly. You can even delete cards, duplicate cards, uprank cards, so make a 9 a 10, a 10 an 11, whatever else. It's really like there's a, I know at this point I've still not seen all of them. There are tons of different ones that you can get. And it's interesting how all of these things interlock together to make a unique run, because it's not just, you can't just use the Jokers to win a run. You can't just use the planet cards. I mean, I guess you might be able to, but you're going to have a more successful run if you mix and match the different strategies.
Yeah. So there's like, I think, four main ways that you can edit your deck with the Jokers, the planet cards, the tarot cards, and the spectral cards. And you get them all in the shop in between the fights, we'll say, the blinds. And what I really like about this is that each individual Joker or planet card or tarot card is extremely easy to understand what those things do. So the text descriptions are all really descriptive and really easy to understand. So you will pick up a tarot card and you'll read what it says, and it will say, like, this turns three cards in your hand into multiplier cards or whatever. And then it will tell you, multiplier adds +4 to this card's multiplier. Boom, done. Very simple procedure. But then as you go, you'll get like, I don't know, between all these different types of cards, you'll have like 10, 20, 30 of these things all happening together. And it's all about trying to synergize those together, which is the strategy of any deck builder. Cool strategy for this game, though, is, Aaron, you can probably talk on this too. A lot of strategy in a lot of deck builders involves trimming down your deck to get like the shitty cards out.
Oh, yeah.
And only get in like this repeating loop of, I'm only drawing my best cards all the time. And I have not found that to be the case in Bellatro. Like, you start with 52 cards, and a lot of my best runs will have like 60 or 70 cards in it by the end of it.
I guess it depends on your, like, what kind of deck you're going for. That's true. This one really, really stupid run, not to get too in depth, but basically I had one Joker that made it so if my first hand only has one card, like the card that I played is destroyed. So I would just use that to get rid of cards. And then I would just keep using tarot cards and spectral cards to make every card into like either like this suit or that suit. And then, yeah, there's all sorts of really goofy, stupid ways to rig your deck almost.
Yeah.
And also, before you pick a blind, you can also skip a blind to get a tag, which gives you like a free pack or, lets you get like a double tag, which like doubles the next tag you get or something.
Yeah. You need to do most of those fights because they give you money at the end. That's how you get money. But sometimes the bonus for skipping that fight will be good enough that it's in your best interest to not do that. Like, at the end of each ante, there is a boss fight, basically. And the boss fights have big target scores, and they all have a debuff that they throw on you. So, for example, they'll say, like, okay, in this fight, spades are worth nothing. So you can play a spade, but it'll be a complete waste. Sometimes if you skip something earlier, you might be able to, like, re-roll what that boss is and, like, get yourself out of a really bad situation. So taking on, or, like, being aware of, like, everything that's going on is something that took a little bit, because it's a little overwhelming when you first start playing, the amount of, not like the amount of things on screen, but just knowing what everything is, knowing where to look for all that information. It took me maybe about an hour before I felt really comfortable with all that. But once you are in it and you're able to like know where to look for, what do these Jokers do? Where do I look to find the reward for skipping this fight or something like that? I need to stop saying fight because it's not a combat game. It's a high score challenge, basically. So knowing where to look for all of that. Once you get that, then everything is presented to you really clearly. It just takes a little bit to like get in the zone.
Yeah. Well, and reading is really important reading is fundamental. it's really important because, like, I've screwed myself over because, so when you're, Dave mentioned earlier that the antis are essentially the rounds and there are eight of them. Each round, you see all three blinds, the small, big, and boss, their numbers and their detail, like what the boss blind does at the beginning of every ante.
Yeah.
And if you're not careful, if you don't read, you could end up at a boss blind that has a debuff that completely shuts you down. Like, say you have an engine built on using diamonds. There's a boss blind that disables diamonds. You don't get scores from them. If you're not paying attention or shifting your strategy on the way to that boss, you get completely demolished and it would end your run. And so I had had many plays where I wasn't really paying that close attention. I'd get into the boss blind, see the debuff, and it completely shut down my strategy. And I just have to lose because there's no way out of it. And so it's not only reading that. That's reading is important to understand it, but also to plan. You can't just put together a slapdash strategy and win, not easily anyway, because you could just screw yourself over if you're not paying attention.
Yeah, it's actually one of my bigger like criticisms for the game itself is that I feel like more often than in another deck builder of that type, it's not that I didn't build a good engine. It's just that I hit just some really shitty RNG that just makes it impossible to win. And so like sometimes you'll make a really good synergy and you're just demolishing everything. And then you'll run into the boss that is the perfect counter for your strategy. But sometimes you don't get an ability to alter what you're doing in an effective way or alter what that boss is doing. And it's just, you lose out of pure RNG. Which sucks when you get later in these runs. Like I had one on the stream where I got really deep and I was just crushing everything and I lost because of the exact situation you talked about. But I had no opportunity to really alter it because let's say you get to the beginning of a new ante and you see the boss upcoming is the perfect counter for what you're doing. You have two visits to the shop to change your entire strategy, which I don't feel like is feasible unless you have tons of money, basically.
Right. Yeah.
So sometimes I feel like you just get fucked by RNG more often than I would like to see, or very early in the run, which hurts less, but it still feels bad to do literally the first fight. And you just get the shittiest draws and you can't get 300 points because you just keep playing like queen high cards over and over again because that's all that's coming up. That feels bad, but it hurts way less than losing this perpetual motion machine that you've built, this beautiful engine, because a random boss blind came up that is the perfect counter and you can't adjust because you were never given the opportunity to really adjust, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. The game almost kind of gives you like a little bit of an ability to do like a plan B kind of. I guess like whenever you go and buy like planet packs, if I didn't get like my specific planet card that I wanted, I would just be like, okay, well, I'll just fucking set that aside for a rainy day just in case I do get one of those dickhead boss blinds where it's like, oh, no spades, or like it's, oh, your hand has to have five cards or it doesn't count. So yeah, it's good to just toss one of those like other hands aside just in case it's like a plan B. But
yeah, and you can discard cards. We haven't mentioned that yet, but you have very limited discards depending on, there's different decks that have different rule sets. So you can discard cards if you like, you know, draw a shitty hand. You can get out of that. But eventually, I feel like you're going to make a fairly specific strategy on like a very successful run. And you're going to keep drawing and discarding cards to try to set up specific types of hands in my experience. Yep. And if you just draw shitty cards, which is always a factor in deck builders for sure. But if you just draw shitty cards, or if you get a boss that debuffs exactly what you are trying to do, then sometimes I feel like you lose through no fault of your own, which never feels good.
Yeah. I mean, I think Aaron does bring up a good point, though, that you, so we didn't mention you have storage of two cards, either planet,
yeah,
store a planet card, a specter card, I believe, and an or an arcana card, like any two of those three, or you can choose to use them immediately in some cases, but often you'll hold them because they only affect an active hand or a certain blind or whatever, and those can be helpful to pivot, but only, like, it's very fine-tuned, right? I think the RNG can make it so, like, you just hit a dead end and that's it. I think strategy will always help. And so someone like Aaron, who's a true sicko of the sickest sickos, might be able to pivot on that in a way that maybe me and Dave can't, because we're either not thinking that far ahead, or, like, for me, honestly, most of my antis that I've played, I'm barreling forward, picking up any joker I can, any arcana or planet I can. Sometimes a strategy will emerge that I'll lean into, but often it's like I'm throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping it sticks.
Spaghetti.
And sometimes it does, and then sometimes it just falls on the dog.
Yeah. Speaking of, my other big criticism for the way this all plays out is that the cadence for unlocking new jokers and new tarot cards and new specter cards and new vouchers, which is another like one-time purchase you can buy in the shop that does cool stuff, you unlock those things as you go, and the cadence is quite slow for unlocking new stuff. Like if you play the first like 4 or 5 hours, you'll unlock a bunch. But I played this for 3 or 4 hours today and didn't unlock a single thing. I was playing with a new deck that I'd never played before, still didn't unlock anything. And I see on like some of the, again, those YouTube videos where people have billion point hands or whatever, they're playing Joker cards that I don't have access to. And I would like to unlock a new Joker card every time I play a run or like get somewhat deep into a run, you know? Like I think in a game like this, a roguelike that is built around unlocking better Jokers than the starting set, because I don't think you're going to win a run on your first hand. You just don't have the good shit unlocked yet.
Yeah.
So I think that it feels kind of bad to play for multiple hours and not unlock anything new.
Yeah, that can be tough. I mean, I feel like, again, my with roguelike deck builders specifically, my knowledge is limited. Slay the Spire is the biggest one. And like, I know that unlocking the classes, I think it's pretty quick in the beginning and then it slows down a little bit until you have them all. But I can see that. I mean, also part of the problem I think here with this game and unlocking stuff is like, there's a lot to unlock. But once you've hit the majority of it, like any other randomness, like the smallest bits towards the end are the hardest to hit kind of a thing.
Yeah. And it's the unlocks are based on like achievements kind of. It's like beat this level with this deck and then you unlock a new Joker. Or maybe this Joker will show up in the shop and you have to buy it in order to like, quote, discover it. But like, if that Joker doesn't fit in my run, I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to buy something that doesn't fit in my strategy just for the sake of maybe unlocking it later. Like, I think that a lot of those other ones where like you rack up some kind of experience points as you go, and that is what determines when you unlock stuff. It's just it feels a little bit better. Like, it kind of takes the edge off of losing 5 or 6 runs in a row when you are unlocking stuff as you go, if that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, that absolutely would. That's why like Monster Train and Slay the Spire, I'm pretty sure Slay the Spire had something like that, where like when you like fill up a bar basically and you unlock like new relics or new cards, but Monster Train especially, those are really cool ways to alleviate the sting of losing a run that you spent like maybe 2 hours on. Was you'd unlock like a bunch of stuff or like upgrade your starting thing or whatever. But there is a lot of stuff to unlock in this game. It's insane. Like you can push, I think it's like, I'm doing the switch buttons cause I'm chaotic as fuck, but you can press like minus or plus and bring up like the unlock screen. And there's so much shit. It's kind of overwhelming, but, There's also a surprising amount of like dumb hidden stuff you can do too. Like if you buy the blank voucher 5 times, you unlock a cool new voucher. If you play a royal flush, you unlock a cool joker that way, which is just like a straight flush, but with like ace, king, queen. I don't remember what the hell it is, but yeah, there's a surprising amount of stuff to unlock in this game. Way more than in goddamn Wild Frost, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's just like hearing that makes it feel kind of even worse to know that I played for 4 hours today and didn't unlock anything at all. I would just like, you know, like to keep that drip feed of new stuff incoming. And, you know, if it's my fault for not buying those undiscovered jokers in the shop whenever I see them, then that's my fault. But I don't really love
that's
that.
Absolutely not your fault. Yeah, if they don't fit your build, no need to waste your money, man. It's not you.
Yeah. That's I'm what not, I like I'm to not hear. Joking, it's no, not yeah. me. It's not me.
It's not you. It's definitely not.
So that is like the basic introduction to how Balatro works, the good, and then a couple of criticisms that I personally have. Before we get into like wrapping this up and then getting into the shop talk, I do want to shout out the aesthetic of this game, which is really, really nice. Visually, it has this very cool CRT, but like spacey-wacy CRT, almost like you're playing a poker machine when you're drunk, kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
Like the earthbound, like lava lamp background shit.
Yeah, too. Yeah, exactly. With that, and then you mentioned how many jokers there are, Matt. The joker designs are very good. There's I read an AMA that the developer did on Reddit where someone asked, like, did you get tired of drawing clowns? And they were like, yeah, I did, actually, because there are so many jokers. They all have unique designs to them. So visually, it's a very, very cool looking game.
Yeah, totally. Also, it sounds awesome. I mean, I'm a big music nerd, and the composer is Lewis F., who is basically unlisted. Like, I couldn't find anything else that Lewis F. has done, but the music, like you have in your notes here, Dave, is low-key, kind of like the same song thematically with, like, a bunch of variations. Like, there's a mood, and, like, this is the ideal podcast or album listening game. Like, you could listen to music or listen to a podcast while playing this. I often have. But I also do like just listening to the music from the game, because even though it's repetitive, it's not bad. Like, it's kind of a vibe.
I could sit and listen to this for 6 hours straight. It's fine.
Absolutely.
Like, it's not grating at all. It's very pleasant.
Yeah. And like,
it fits the bill perfectly too. Yeah. It's just a chill tune for chill game. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, it fits the CRT vibe too. Like, it feels very like low, like low grade synth is not the right word, but like that vibe. Like, it's like, it's no one's playing this on the highest performance keyboard you've ever heard. It's like someone's got a like kind of well worn keyboard that they're just kind of winding away at while you're playing. It fits that kind of old schoolish kind of trippy vibe.
Yeah, and it fits. Yeah, that kind of trippy vibe with the music fits in with kind of the spacey wacy visual aesthetic to it too.
So. If you've played Earthbound or watched Doctor Who, you know what we mean.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah, the Earthbound ish like lava lamp backgrounds is definitely happening in this game, like Aaron said.
I love it so much, dude. It sends me every single time.
So safe to say that we would recommend Balatro to basically anyone who likes card games. Like, that's, unless you like are violently opposed to playing a card game, this is a very easy recommendation. And there are people out there who are just like, I just hate cards. I won't play anything with cards. So, I mean, my heart goes out to those people, but those are the only people that I would say, like, don't play this. Cause even if you don't like poker, it's really not poker. So it's easy to say, give it a shot. And it's like $20 full price.
Yeah. Hella bang for your buck. So much bang for your buck.
Yeah, very quickly, like, whatever metric you put on a game being worth it, I feel like this meets all of them pretty easily.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think this is, like, and honestly, even if you think you don't like roguelike deck builders or don't like card games, but you're open to trying, like, if you're someone who staunchly hates them, then so be it, on your way, I guess. But like, if you're someone who is open to the idea of trying a new game, even if you typically don't like these kinds of games, I think this is the best starting point you will ever find. It's just built so easily. Yeah.
Yep.
And it's so approachable. Like, there's a button you can press during play that just shows you the poker hands and how much they're all worth currently. Like, they lay it out for you. It's very easy to get into. I think I would say it's the cliche, easy to learn, hard to master kind of game. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in card games at all, whether you love them or you're curious but have not really played them, I easily can recommend this game for sure.
And it's just so chill. It's just like, I can't count. I can't even try to keep count of how many times I've just been like profusely sweating playing some like Monster Train or like Wild Frost or something. I'm thinking like five turns ahead, trying to pick out like the best strategy, just racking my brain for a straight hour, trying to make like the perfect move. But this game, like, no, you just discarding to get maybe like two, three threes and like two twos, and then you just play it, and then it's just like the big numbers go, and then boom, you're,
yeah,
it's over. It's just
big numbers just make brain go burr.
Another nice visual touch is, first of all, you can speed up the animations for when cards and multipliers and all of that is going off. Oh, yeah. Like, if you wanted to kind of fire off more quickly, you can. But a nice visual touch that we didn't mention that I just want to give a quick shout out to is when you get like a really good score on a hand going on, and it will like individually tick like plus chips for this card, plus chips for this card, multiplier for this joker, and it will keep going. And if you get a big enough thing, it will like go in flames, basically.
Yeah, yeah, dude.
And that's when you know, oh, we're cooking now. This is good.
Yeah. There's gonna be some overkill point wise.
You've assembled all five pieces of Exodia, baby. You win that one. When it's on fire, you win.
Yeah.
So the animations are great. We didn't actually talk about it that much, but like all the jokers are animated, and like during the tutorial, the basic joker like talks to you and has like a word bubble, and like it's just all of the design elements in the visuals, like of the cards, are also really great. I think in Sicko Mode we'll go into more detail, but like there is a ton of artistry here for this pixel-based game.
Speaking of, a quick shout out to the high contrast cards option, which will make the clubs blue, the spades black, the diamonds yellow, and the hearts red, instead of having those similar suits be the same color. Highly recommend you turn those on just for, you know, no mistakes, because nothing worse than thinking that you're going to play a great hand and then being like, ah, that was a spade, not a club. Whoops.
Also, I don't know if we mentioned this, but like cards can also be different. Like you can have like what, foil, polychrome, holographic and stuff like that, and that also affects their not just like the regular cards but the jokers as well too. That'll affect like the multiplier and the amount of chips they give and stuff like that, and like the different other modifications. Like I think Matt kind of touched on that, like the gold cards and like lucky cards and stuff like that.
Yeah, those are all cool visually too though. Like the lucky card is like worn like it's been in someone's pocket for a long time and stuff, so good stuff there.
Shout out to the scuba joker. I love the scuba joker.
Hell yeah. So before we get into that shop talk, Balatro Sicko Zone, I do want to throw it to you both to plug your podcasts before maybe some people jump out. So Aaron, it's been a while since you were on the show. Tell people about Super Pod Saga.
Oh yeah. Okay. It's Super Pod Saga. It's the most like casual, laid back podcast you might ever listen to. Oh, I don't know. Man, everybody's pretty chill in there. I don't know. Whatever. Super Pod Saga. It's I bring on some guests and we talk about a different video game topic each week, and we cover a whole big old smorgasbord, a big old lasagna of different topics all the damn time. Different lasagna of different guests too, I suppose too. But it's just a loosey goosey, freeform discussion. It'll be like our favorite hidden gems, or we'll talk about, we've got another new episode coming out next week, all about the fourth gen consoles. That's going to be fun. And we have fun little ad breaks where we make up goofy episode sponsors, and we like to have fun at Super Pod Saga. But if anybody at all is interested, just go to superpodsaga.com on your web browser of choice. And all of the episodes are there, our blog that we haven't touched in 2 months, our socials. I like to add lots of GIFs to the website to make it clunky and stupid, but it's there. Check it out.
Yeah, and I've been on the show a couple times. Matt's been on the show several times.
Oh, so, yeah.
Different groups of guests every time. Always a good time. I was on the show talking about roguelikes, which I feel like if Balatro was out when we did that episode, we probably would have talked about it then. And then I was on for another episode. I think it was about the PlayStation.
Yep, the whole line of PlayStation. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole line of PlayStations. All five of them. And like I said, Matt's been on there several times, so go check out Superpod Saga. And Matt, it has not been that long since you were on the show.
No, you can't get rid of me.
No, I can't. Keep coming back. But tell people about your podcasts.
Sure. Really quick, if you want to check out my Superpod episodes, because I looked them up earlier, I was on solo with the gang talking about favorite multiplayer games. I was on with my co-host Jeff from Fun and Games talking about games that lived up to the hype. And then I was on most recently with Jer from Super Ghost Radio talking about video game characters we'd like to have a drink with. And they're all a blast. Really fun stuff. Yeah. And incredibly stupid half the time, too, in the best way. I mean that with the highest
of...
best ad breaks in the business.
It's true.
That's right.
As for my podcast, I'll try and keep this as quick as possible, as we're already running longer than I think we planned. I do three podcasts. I mentioned before that I also edit for the Game Informer show, which is a great pod. It's been around forever. You should definitely go check that out. But my shows are the video game related ones are Fun and Games, which the main show is topic based, not too dissimilarly from Superpod. But we also do retrospectives and interviews. We've interviewed developers, composers. We do live events like, by the time you're hearing this, either soon or shortly after, our PAX East 2024 episode will be out. Jeff and I get a ton of developer interviews and talk about our experience on the show floor, that kind of stuff. And then there are shorter form episodes that both Aaron and Dave have done called Side Quests, where each episode, a different host talk about a game they love and why they love it. Dave has a never-ending list of games he's going to cover. Aaron's That's done right. one, and I'm going to have him come back. You did SteamWorld... Dig?
SteamWorld Heist.
SteamWorld Heist. So many SteamWorld games.
The whole
games.
SteamWorld series.
Yeah, you might as well just run the whole series, right? But they're great because I bring on not only just podcasters like these fine folks, but fans of the show, folks who've never podcasted before, comedians, composers, whoever. Anyone who wants to talk about a game for like 15 to 20 minutes and why they love it, unjudged. It's really one of my favorite things I make because it just kind of shares the joy of individual games while recommending them. And that's a blast. The other video game show I do is called Reignite. Started as a Mass Effect podcast. We did the whole trilogy and then Andromeda. And after that, we shrugged and said, I guess Dragon Age now. And so we're currently a Dragon Age Origins podcast. We are just about, as of when we're recording, done with the Awakening DLC, which if you've played, is the longest DLC in the history of video games. And then we will jump to Dragon Age 2 and 3 and beyond. But I do that with my incredible co-host, Frankie Bradley Lestrange. And then I do, currently on hiatus, but I do a TV movie podcast called Screen Snark. Dave has guested on before. It's me and my co-host Rachel talking about what we watched most recently and then kind of also interviewing our guest. That'll hopefully be back this summer. Right now, both of our schedules are just not allowing us to record very much, but there's a huge backlog. Also, because I didn't before, I should shout out my co-host Jeff Moonen, who has also been a guest on this very podcast and is my co-host over on Fun and Games. I think that's everything. And then like I DJ and do other stuff too. I don't know. Go to djstormageddon.com. It's all there. I've talked too much.
Jeez. I don't know how you do it.
I don't either.
Yeah. So a lot of podcasts. And if you stay tuned on Fun and Games, you'll hear me in a couple different forms on Fun and Games in the future. And yes. I've done a couple episodes in the past, Side Quest episodes about Disco Elysium and Rain World and Chained Echoes, I think.
Yes, correct.
And a regular episode of the show where we talked about emergent gameplay before. So I'm all over the place too. Can't get rid of me either. So everyone, while I'm talking about myself for the next minute or so, can go down in the show notes, check out the links for everything that Matt and Aaron do, and check out their shows. It's always quality material. So before we take our break, I would like to give the call to action to leave a rating and review for this podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, it's really helpful. People are going to be in their podcast app searching for episodes about Balatro. Maybe I missed the train. Who knows? But you can do your part. by leaving a rating and review that will help juice the algorithm for me and this episode and help people find it. It's also very helpful for my mood, we'll say. That sounds like I get mad if I don't get reviews, but when I see one, it makes my day. And I give my dog a treat. It's a whole thing. We got a whole procedure over here. Also, I do another podcast called A Top 3 Podcast, which is a dumb good time. It is a comedy show. We do top 3 lists, so you can check that show out. You can join the Discord server, where at the time of recording, we have a Balatro channel where people are sharing their winning runs, talking about their heartbreaking defeats, talking about their strategies, and all of that. And we would love to have you come in and talk about that, as well as talk about other video games you're playing, life, movies, other media. It's a great group of people that hang out in there. So I highly recommend joining. There's an invite link down in the show notes. And finally, if you want to support the show monetarily, you can do that at patreon.com/realDaveJackson. For as little as $2 per month, you can get a bunch of treats related to this podcast. So with all that being said, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it is sicko time for Balatro. All right, so I want to get this sicko shop talk section started by just giving some tips for new people who are just starting the game, or maybe somebody who has played a little bit but is struggling to get runs off the ground, because I do think there are some things that are really important in this game that the game doesn't necessarily teach you. So I think I'll just start with one of them, which is that the order of the cards matters. When you play them both in your hand, cards play from left to right, and the order of your jokers seems to matter. Now, that one I'm less confident in.
It does. It does matter, especially if you have like ones that trigger for certain. Yeah, it does matter.
Yeah, I just haven't been able to like super pin down the best way. The way I do it right now with the jokers is jokers that give extra chips go on the left, jokers that add plus multiplier go in the middle, and jokers that do times multiplier go on the right. That's all I got, though.
Yep.
Oh, okay. That's it. Nice.
I'm not an expert, but like that's also what I do, because it just makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. I suppose we didn't say earlier, but I have only won one run. Completed one time. Aaron, I assume you've had multiples.
On the Switch, I've beaten the game with the first three decks, and on the Xbox, I've beaten the game with the first two decks. It might be the other way around, but I guess that's five.
Okay.
And I have not completed a run yet. I've gotten close. The highest I got was to Ante 7. And on the first, not even the boss blind, on this, like one of the like small blind, I just couldn't hit the point total. My strategy that worked for the lower numbers wasn't working for the higher numbers.
Yeah, I had one winning run, and I've had two that I lost on the boss of Ante number 8. Ugh. And one of them was in like heartbreaking fashion. I was like 100 points short.
Yeah.
Which sucks. But anyway, back to the order of the cards. So a tip for new people is a lot of times you'll get jokers that will say like the first face card you play will do this, et cetera, et cetera. And what that means is the card on the left, that's the first one that plays, not necessarily the highest one. Or you can say like, it will say like the first card that you play in a hand will trigger twice. So it doesn't necessarily have to be like the highest card, as in like ace or king or queen or something. If you have a 4 that has a bunch of cool shit attached to it and you want it to trigger twice, you need to put that card all the way on the left. It will not affect your hand. Like if you're playing a full house, you don't have to group all of those things together. You can split them up. The game will still understand that you're playing a full house. So that's the biggest thing that like I kind of figured out, but then I think it was Ryan from Listoff who gave me like the real tip that was like, hey, make sure you pay attention to what order you're playing the things. And you might have to like drag stuff around to make sure that things are triggering in the order you want them to.
Yeah. I mean, I think a tip to add on to that is like, you can reorder your hand, the cards in your hand before you play any of them. So there are two options to just sort them by like value order or suit type. That's like automatic. You just tap the button and it does it. And then you can also manually drag them around.
Yeah.
So if you're a visual learner, which I often am, I just pull groups of cards together to look and say, wait, do I really have nothing or do I have something? I think also something on top of that, like something I didn't do for a long time in the first couple hours was discard cards. You get a certain amount of like discards, different decks augment it, but I think the default is 3 discards. Is that right? And then it goes up from there. And so you can discard 3 times. And like, if you have nothing, you can really like focus like, all right, I have 4 diamonds and I have nothing. So in theory, if I get rid of the rest of my cards, I'll get 1 diamond out of all those draws. You don't always, but like you can use that kind of logic by reordering and using your discards strategically. There are also like upgrades and jokers that give you bonuses if you have no discards left, if you haven't used your discards. So like they are an active part of the play. They're not just a thing you have just in case you get stuck.
Yeah. Also to add on to discarding, a tip, shout out to John from Gaming in the Wild for helping me out with this on the stream. Let's say you're playing a 2-pair. You can play up to 5 cards, but you're playing a 2-pair. That's only 4 cards. You can throw in an unrelated 5th card, and that's like a free discard, basically. Right. It will not affect your 2-pair at all. It won't be scored, but let's say like you play your 2-pair and then you have like the beginnings of another hand for the next time, and you have this other card that's just in the way and you would like to get another crack at getting a better card. You can just throw that trash card in, and it's like it doesn't count as a discard. It's a free thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Hell yeah. I can't think of anything else that you guys haven't already said. I guess, yeah, just you don't need to buy everything that you come across in the shop, though. That's that's for sure. That's for true. Like, just like especially if, like, say you have a good thing going on with the jokers that you have and the shop only has, like, say, just a bunch of, like, tarot card packs or something like that. You don't have to waste your money on those. If you already got a good thing going, save your money and just skip the shop. Mm-hmm. No need to waste it. Save it for a rainy day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also try and start from one point. Like, it's very easy to look at a bunch of jokers, go, well, like, and get ahead of yourself. And like, well, if I stack this with that or if I get that, try and build off of something simple first. You can get more complicated, but as when you're first starting out, if there's a joker like gives you extra multiplier if you have only clubs, pick that and maybe start converting your cards to clubs using the arcana or, you know, things like that, because those stack really well. Or if like you notice that you get a lot of pairs, or pairs are easy for you to find, or you lean towards that because it's a strategy that works, then boost your pairs, right? Like, I think focusing on a thing that you understand in the beginning will give you the groundwork to then build the more complicated strategies, because they're not always super present when you're just staring at what you can buy. But as you continue to build, they stack on each other pretty well, even with the RNG.
Yeah. At a certain point, I would say probably in, ante number 1, you can beat the first 2 blinds with just the cards in your hand.
Yeah.
But to beat the boss, and then in order to beat anything in Ante 2 and beyond, you're going to need to start juicing the multiplier or getting bonus chips or something like that. So often, I will just pick one or both of like the first jokers I see just to get something going, because I'll have a chance later to sell those if they're no longer relevant. But you do need to like get that ball rolling early. And then my other like final tip that I wrote down for either new players or people who've played a couple hours and like they're, like I said, struggling to get runs off the ground. There's 3 ways that you can juice your score. You can get extra chips. You can get what's called the plus multiplier, And then you can get the multiplier, and it's usually like 1.5 times or 2 times multiplier. But getting a run that goes really deep will need you to do all three of those things in your hands. You can't just focus on the multiply, like the plus multiplier, because you can get like, you know, plus 30 or 40 or 80 multiplier. But if it's multiplying like 30 chips, then that's bullshit. It's not going to be that much. So you need to get, like, you need to focus on all three of those. So there's a couple jokers that I really like for just making one of those really easy. One of the jokers I really like, there's two of them. One of them I think is just called the blue joker. And I can't remember which it does, but there's two. They do similar things. One of them gives you plus 2 chips for every card left in your hand. So it's like 90 to 100 free chips every hand. And then the other one that I really like is the one that gives you plus 40 chips for every remaining discard. And I don't discard a ton when I play anyway. I only discard in the boss fights, basically. So those are just free chips all the time. And then in the boss fight, they start to get less and less useful. But if I need to discard that many times, then I'm in trouble anyway. So, like, I don't feel like those are the reason I lose in a lot of those fights. So the tip, I got really hung up on, like, okay, multiplier is better than chips. So I'm putting all my effort into, like, getting a higher multiplier. But then, like I said, it's like, what's, you know, 15 times 200 is still a really low score. So you need to get those chips in there, too. You can't abandon that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's fair.
So if we don't have any more tips for new players, then let's just open it up and talk about, like, our strategies for deck building or good synergies that we've found, things like that. So Aaron, you've had a bunch of winning runs. So tell us about, like, what's your mindset when you're building out a run, we'll say.
Man, I guess I just, like, when I'm starting out, I'll be on the lookout for jokers that affect, like, a certain type of hand, or, like, I guess maybe a certain way I've been playing. If I get maybe, like, say the banana joker, where it's like add plus 20 multiplier, 1 in 4 chance this card is destroyed or something stupid, like, I'll still pick that up. But eventually just focus on the one hand type is what I'll usually do. You know, beef it up with planets. If I'm building a deck for, like, flushes or, like, two pairs or something like that, use the tarot cards to, like the death tarot card, where it's like, pick 2 cards, the left one becomes the right one or something like that. Use those a bunch to manipulate your deck. One of my favorite decks ever was, the one I mentioned earlier, where, like, so one joker was like, the first card you play, or if your first hand is one card, destroy it. So I would use that to get rid of all my hearts. And then I had this other card that made it so, like, any face card automatically becomes a gold card. And then I had another joker that made it so, like, if I play any, like, augmented cards, it would remove the augmentation and then give me time, or plus like 0.25 to my times multiplier. So I would just keep using that, and I got it pretty early to, like, beef up this, like, maybe 4 times multiplier constant. Yeah, it's focus on the one, I guess, kind of hand or strategy. It doesn't need to be specifically like one hand. I guess it just depends on what the RNG feeds you. Like, does that make sense? Like, yeah, it doesn't need to focus on one hand in specific, just, like, whatever works best for whatever jokers you have at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. The ones that I avoid like that are, like, there's jokers that sound really good, but it's like, you know, you get a really awesome bonus if you can get, if you play a straight, but, like,
yeah,
I get a straight, like, once every ante, basically. Like, it's kind of hard to pull that off. So I usually avoid stuff like that. The one run that I had that actually won, I got a joker that was like, every time you play a pair, add 0.02 multiplier to this. And so I just played pairs over and over again. And by the end, it was like some ridiculous, like times eight multiplier or some shit. And it just like wrecked everything in my path. But that's kind of what I like about it is that I think I've done like a straight flush once in my whole time playing this. And it's like, that's, you're playing poker. Like that's what you want. But in Bellatro, it's like, no, you can just play pairs, single pairs and just wreck the entire thing if you get the right jokers. So I think the strategy of like letting those early jokers dictate where you go and then kind of adjusting along the way, that's the way to play. The times when I've picked up one of those early jokers and thought like, oh, there's two other jokers this would synergize with, I hope I get those. Those runs don't go too well because sometimes I just don't get those other ones. Like if that joker is not good enough by itself. But there's enough jokers that like I feel like everything will synergize with a couple other things. So you'll find something that meshes together.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say, if you kind of think ahead a little bit, just don't put all your ducks into one basket, I guess. I don't know. It'll snowball if you build it like the, I guess, in a good way. Or, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Cut this out. Matt, go ahead. I don't know what the hell I'm trying to say.
I was just going to say, also, I think Dave has a good point because, like, building off of one joker to start at least is a lot simpler. And I think I mentioned that earlier also. For example, my favorite joker still to this day, every time I see it, I get it, is the misprint. Because the misprint is a shifting card that you get a random mult every time it scores from 0 to 23. And on the downside, there have been boss battles where boss blinds where I get three zeros in a row and, you know, it sinks me. But then there have also been like boss blinds where I get a 23 and sink it in one hand. And I think those kinds of strategy really works early on. And then you can swap stuff out, sell stuff. There's a Fibonacci card that ace, 2, 3, 5, and 8 give you a +8 mult when scored, which is like kind of random, but really useful. There's Odd Todd and Even Steven, which give you chips based on the even or odd number cards, which are really good together. Like those kinds of basic strategies are good starting points. And then like Dave and Aaron said, using the other stuff to supplement it is how you can really get stuff going. If you focus on one kind of hand, you can use it, but the simpler the hand, the better, like two pair or pair, three of a kind, like the ones that require less cards because you're more likely to get them, or like the similar suits, things like that.
Yeah.
That's true.
I think on that run where I had the joker that like upgraded every time I got a pair, I also just used a ton of those planet cards and got pair itself up to like +15 or some ridiculous shit. So it worked out really well. And like, that's the other side. So like I criticized the RNG earlier for like, I feel like being the reason you lose a lot of times, but sometimes you will luck into just these super overpowered combinations that just wreck everything.
Yeah. And also, don't be afraid to sell jokers. Like, The one that Matt mentioned earlier, the Fibonacci, like later on, once you do start to find more jokers that kind of benefit you, I guess, more directly, like you have a much better time focusing on, like, I don't know, say it doesn't work for your hand later on, sell it. Like if it's not working for you right now, or like it doesn't benefit you in every single blind or every single battle or whatever, sell it. Like, it'll help you out in the early run, sure, but toward the mid or like late run, if it's not doing anything for you every single battle, sell that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like you might have like a combo of like four or five jokers that is wrecking everything early on, but like if you start to notice the matches getting closer and closer as like the antes get higher and higher, you might have to sell one of those jokers that got you to the point where you're at, but it's not going to get you all the way through. And there is usually a better joker that you'll find somewhere along the way. Sometimes you have to take like a leap of faith where it's like, I'll pick this Joker up and it's only going to be good if I find this other Joker. But then if you do, it will break the whole thing wide open.
Like the baseball Joker. Fun. I love that guy.
Which one?
The baseball Joker. It's it makes it so like each, you get an extra times 1.5 multiplier for every uncommon Joker you have.
Okay.
And that
nice.
Fucking breaks the game.
Yeah. Cause if you can get that like times multiplier, like above 2 or 3, and then like just, you know, score a bunch of points otherwise, you can start getting into ridiculous stuff. And like, that's why I like the steel cards. I like to make the really low, like 2s and 3s. I like to make them into steel cards and just kind of hang on to them. That stuff is great. Any other, you know, tips or, you know, broken, busted combos that we've had before?
It's funny. I haven't gotten really any combos that are like super broken. Like again, like I think the misprint works really early on, but like you guys said, like I think most of my strategies have fallen apart because I haven't really found those connectors yet. So I at least haven't like in the early game, there's always like a couple of multiplier cards that like you're getting like 1,000 for like a 300 blind and you feel like a god. And then much later on, that's less and less.
Yeah, early on you'll find those cards where those jokers that's like plus 4 multiplier for every spade or something, and that's like amazing in the early rounds. And then like later on, that's small potatoes compared to what you need to build up. So I had a good one earlier today that there's a joker that's like times 1.5 multiplier for every card of this suit, and the suit changes every round. But I also had one of those like +4 multiplier for every spade jokers, and then like so once every 2 or 3 battles they would be the same suit and it would just like wreck everything. If I could get a flush, you'd win in one hand basically, but it's not super reliable because it's only, you know, one in every 3 or 4 battles. So that run didn't win, but I had a good time fucking up the boss of like Ante number 3 with it. So
before we go, fuck the arm. The arm is my most hated boss.
Remind me what like, that one does.
It's like -1 to the hand that you play, like -1 to the level of the hand that you play.
Oh,
and it's permanent too. So like if you build up fucking like a level 10 2 pair. For every 2 pair you play, it'll decrease it by 1 level permanently. Fuck that boss.
Oh, yeah. That sucks.
It's the worst. My least favorite boss blind is the eye, which is every hand played this round must be a different type.
Oh, yeah.
That sucks too.
The one that's been fucking me over a lot recently is the one that debuffs every card that you've played previously in that ante.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, if you've won the previous matches in one hand, it's not a big deal. But if you're like, you know, trying to set something up, or if you're just getting a couple of shit draws, then you might get into that like round and just be like, this is useless. Everything is useless. I had the run that I had on stream, I just remembered, that was like crushing everything, is I had like 4 jokers that enhanced face cards, and then 1 joker that made everything a face card. So it was like every single card I played was the best card possible. And then the boss was all face cards are debuffed, and it's like you get 0 points, fuck you, go home. Which is when I learned, like you said, Aaron, not to put all my eggs in one basket like that.
Fuck. I'm sorry, Dave. Oh, man.
It was brutal.
That's rough.
I was scoring like hundreds of thousands of points every hand, just laughing my way. You can watch it on stream. You can watch the replay of me getting really cocky and then seeing what the boss did and just being like, oh, well, I guess this is what I get for talking all that shit.
Oh, that's good. The fucking the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme comes on as soon as like the boss blind starts.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man. All right. Let's get out of here. We've all got Balatro to play, right? I appreciate you both coming on and talking about it with me for this special bonus episode of the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm always happy to come back on.
Absolutely. I don't use that word often, but I'll give you one right now.
Only in special occasions. Awesome. Exactly. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoy your next run in Bellatro. I hope it is fruitful, and I hope you go check out Super Pod Saga, Fun and Games, Reignite, and Screen Snark. And of course, as always, tune in next time for the next game to come out of the backlog.